Blog Talk Radio.
Life seems to crush your dreams, so find your balance for all your needs. A little work, some family fun. Find your love, keep your life on the run. Told you how the story goes, so write your own script before you grow old. Live your life, laugh out loud. Own who you are, stand up proud. You got
good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast. It is a nice Wednesday night here in the bluegrass in the central part of Kentucky. And this is Stephen Zimmer joining you tonight for episode number 340. And co-hosting with me tonight is the wonderful, vivacious, beautiful, amazing Holly Phillippe. Holly, you should be there somewhere.
I hope. Think I'm here.
I hope.
Am I here?
Yep. There you are.
There you are.
Oh, I'm getting some feedback from you somehow. I'm getting a little bit of feedback. Hello? Oh. Are you there? Yeah, I was getting a little bit of feedback from you. Yes, the show is underway, and it is a Wednesday light, as I said. And, yes, so we have some updates and have a great guest in store for you tonight. And actually, our guest tonight returns for the first time. I actually looked this up since episode number 159. So it's been a while. So that's going to be kind of cool to catch up and find out what's been happening and going on. And we're going to have some great discussion about a lot of stuff. So chat room is open, and it is working. So if you have any trouble, just refresh the page to log in and see Sandy Lender, the genre blender, is the first in the chat room. Very prompt and very, very on point tonight, Sandy. All right, so hopefully we get a few more in there. And tonight, let's go over a little bit of news, Holly, because, we had a barrage of
guest announcements. I also have some news. So when you're done,
okay.
I have some news that you don't even know about yet.
Oh, dear. Holly's going to ambush us. Are you ready for that, folks? Well, we had a wave of new panelists and a new spotlighted guest announced. So this is really exciting. The panelists that were announced for Imaginarium 2023, just yesterday, in fact, are Michael J. Allen, Nancy E. Dunn, T. Lee Harris, Stevie Joe, Rebecca Johnson, and Carissa Turpin, all of whom are going to be panelists at Imaginarium 2023. And, of course, if you go to the official guest page and click on any of their banner graphics, and that will take you to their individual pages so you can read up more about them. And then also joining that group and announced today, in fact, is William Joseph Roberts as a spotlighted guest. And we've had him on the show.
Yay.
And he is just a great award-winning author, editor, and publisher, and he is the lead publisher with the award-winning Three Ravens Publishing, making a lot of waves across the country and around the world in speculative fiction. Great group of authors with Three Ravens Publishing, and William Joseph Roberts is just a fantastic guest to have at a convention, and we announced him today, and then yesterday with the other six new panelists. So we are rolling. I mean, we got a lot more in queue ready to announce. So keep an eye on the page for that. So yes, Holly, you have news that I don't even know about. So, let's find out what happens here.
Oh, this is exciting. We've had many queries about this, many questions. I finally got it solved today. You now will have a reservation link. The reservations are open for the venue, for the hotel, due to the price increases of everything. They did go up a little bit, but they're still very affordable. They're $112 a night. If you want a specific room, I suggest you reserve them ASAP. We sold out last year early on. We've already got people wanting to reserve. So if you want a king bed or a king bed with a mini fridge or two double beds, you better get your reservations in because they're going to go fast, I will tell you. The group code is I6M. So when you go to make your reservation, I6M is your code. And there will be a link. I'll pass this on to Steve, and he could put that up on the website tomorrow under, you know.
Oh, that will be on the yes. No, yeah.
Yes, he'll put you up on the innerimaginarium.com website under host hotel, and then we'll also announce it through, you know, our Facebook channels and all of that.
Yeah, we'll make that a announced post on the homepage. We'll also put, of course, that update on the host hotel page on the site, and we will put an announcement out through all of our platform, on all of our social media channels. Make sure that we do that for you tomorrow, but you actually got a scoop tonight. They finally got it to us. Yay! We've been on them about this. So actually, that makes me happy because we were actually having to really give them a little bit of a nudge today about that. So I'm glad that Holly got the answer. And again, that code is I, numeral 6, and the letter M as in Mark. So I6M is your code. And, yeah, you don't want to wait because we last year every single hotel room sold out. Same thing. You don't want to wait for expo space either. All that sold out. Yeah, better to get set earlier than later. And, yeah, the price only went up a little bit more. And I know Holly's, you know, definitely I'll do a quick check of the link and everything before we post the live announcement. But, yeah, it's I6M, and that is good news. So, yeah, we've been waiting for that. So, yeah, we're off to roll in November here. So, along with all you NaNoWriMo writers, right? So, yes, day two of NaNoWriMo. So I would be remiss not to mention that because I know a lot of our listeners are probably doing NaNoWriMo. It's not something that I personally have done participate in, but, you know, it is a big thing for a lot of authors, and they look forward to it. And it becomes a bit of a social occasion, too, a lot of groups. Some of them meet physically and then others online. But, yeah, it's underway day two, and, yeah, they get their 50,000 words in. So, so that's awesome. That is awesome. And, yeah, it looks like Holly is now in the chat room. Metal Beck Harrison's in the chat room. So, yeah, we're starting to heat up there. And, yeah, things are going good. And so tonight we are definitely going to bring some attention here. We've got two parties that brought you tonight's show. That would be Ren Garcia and Sandy Lender, the Genre Blender. So we're going to give you a couple spots from them, and then we'll be right back with you, and it will be just a few more minutes before our featured guest tonight. Here's a little bit about Ren.
The League of Elder dares to be unusual. It's easy to be swept away in this bold and uninhibited landscape where fantastic heroes become old friends and sinister villains inhabit every dark corner. Dare to explore things best left alone. Each book is your lantern, lighting the path to a world never before seen. So what do you say? Are you weird enough for us?
Yes, Ren. We most certainly are weird enough for you. And we most certainly recommend the League of Elder series, a fantastic, fantastic speculative fiction series. Great cover artwork and, of course, the amazing Ren Garcia. Continue to lobby him. Get on him. Tell him he needs to be at Imaginarium 2023. And, yeah, tell him we sent you. So, yeah, we don't want him to miss it. Don't want him to miss it. So I'm going to come over here to Sandy Lender, the Genre Blender, and we're going to give you a little bit about her, and then we're going to tell you, hey, go out and get some of her books, folks. Here she is.
The latest release from author Sandy Lender is book 3 of the Fairy Holiday series titled, I Know What Your Vampire Did Last Summer. It's a standalone story in the series, but it's got all the fun, humor, horror, and sweet paranormal romance you'd expect of a Lender Blender vampire satire. Come on down to the Naples Hideaway and Marina for a fun and romancy vacay. But watch out for the Grendwolves and the random femme fatale who thinks she's competing for your vampire's attention. Pick up I Know What Your Vampire Did Last Summer by Sandy Lender today.
There you go, a Lender Blender vampire satire from the one and only Sandy Lender. And so now I'm going to bring back Holly. She had to actually reconnect because her connection was a little off, evidently, in the early part of the show. But I'm bringing Holly back in right now. And so, yes, so hopefully you can hear her. That it's not hard to hear Holly. She tends to be loud. So if you can't hear her, it's usually a tech reason.
I had a bad connection. You kept like cutting out, and Sandy was saying in the chat room they were losing sound. So I thought it was me because you were cutting out, and so I hung up and called back, and now you sound great. I mean, it's not doing it.
Well,
now.
Thank you. That's so sweet of you.
Well, it's a technical issue. You sound great too, but yeah, it's a technical issue.
You. Well, Sandy's rocking it tonight. She is up about 2,000 words this evening. She reports that she's actually typing while we do the show tonight. I can't do that, Sandy. I don't know how people do that. But I have a good scene going so far, not stopping NaNoWriMo. Yes, so it looks like Sandy is doing NaNoWriMo. Fantastic. And Sandy, I'm not slacking either. I logged in a little more than 2,200 words today. I crossed the 51,000 mark on the current manuscript, as the novel is going to be about 85,000. That's well over half now, and you're making good progress on the new Raiden Valkyrie novel that I spoke of recently.
Well, you're right. Honestly, Steve, I know you don't participate in NaNo, but you might as well, because you're actually probably over production of what the word count is per day. I had considered it, but I was like, I'm afraid it'd make me nervous. I just can't do that. Because, you know, there's some days I just don't feel good at all. And I just can't make myself be that stressed. I'm afraid it would make me too anxious.
Yeah, I don't worry. Honestly, I've always said, I don't worry about word count. I do average about 2,000 to 3,000 words a day, but just normally. But it's not something that I worry about. You know, if there's a day where I get less, the main thing with me is writing regularly. That's my kind of mantra for writers. But that being said, NaNo is very good for some writers because it really does discipline them to write regularly, and it also helps teach them to finish a project. So for some writers, it can be very, very good. I've talked about NaNo quite a bit in the past, but I do think it's useful for some types of writers. It's definitely a very cool thing, and it's always fun to see all those folks that have their manuscripts done at the end of the month. So probably should put out some posts about my editing services.
I try to encourage people and help them keep accountable, because they'll say, help me keep accountable, and I'll be like, right, you know.
I just remember to put out my link to my editing services at the end of the month, because that's when everybody's got those manuscripts that need editing. you're not done yet. You still need an editor.
Hey, that's called the grift, man. You got a grip.
That's the grip.
Right?
That's our friend Hotep Jesus says, there's a good grift and then there's a bad grift. That's a good grift. That's a grift that's in your benefit, and what we call the win-win. A good grift is a win-win solution. So, yes, there is a good grift. Not all grifts are bad. So, but tonight, Holly, yes, we've got our guest on deck, and this is the first visit since episode number 159, and of course this is episode 340, so I get you back in 2019. So I'm excited. And tonight's guest has been described as the undisputed queen of the warped and the weird, and the unholy child of H.P. Lovecraft and Flannery O'Connor. And yes, Sandy Lender, you'll love this. She's a multi-genre author who writes in a plethora of genres, from horror to Holmesian, from supernatural detective pulp to weird Western. And if asked to describe what brand of horror she writes, she prefers the term quirky spooky. And so it is my honor and definitely excited to bring on back to the Star Chamber show again, the one, the only, Nikki Nelson Hicks. Yay! Your microphone
hey,
is on.
Hey, guys.
There she
hey,
is.
Hey.
All right.
Hey, hello.
Hey, hey.
Hi, guys.
Good to hear you again.
Good, me too. I'm humbly happy you remembered that. I even called. That was 2019, so long ago.
Before the world went down.
I called the before days.
The before times,
well, that's
yes.
True. That was before everything went cuckoo.
Everything
yeah.
went down, yes. I called it the before yeah. times. Yeah, it's just it's a whole different world back then.
Oh, mm-hmm. yes, and I miss mm-hmm. it. But,
yeah.
hey, we
yeah.
forge on. We're writers. We're used to adversity, indie authors. So,
oh, totally. It's indie authors, definitely.
But
we,
it has been a while. I know. Now, I know that
yeah,
you and Holly keep up, have been able to keep up a bit, because Holly has talked to me about, yeah, definitely getting to chat with you a little bit. And, but, yeah, I would love to – I'm really looking forward to catching up with you tonight. But for the new listeners tonight that don't may not know your work, if you want to give, like, mm-hmm. a little introduction to the – you know, I gave a little bit of that in the intro, but I would like to have you introduce your work, and then we'll start diving into the fun stuff.
Okay, so basically I write a lot of different genres. I'm pretty much kind of a, well, if you give me a contract, you tell me what you want, I'll write you a story. Right now the biggest things I have are my Jake Easton Hedges series. It's a series of six stories, pretty much based in 1930s New Orleans. It's kind of a, imagine a cult detective. I basically take this guy and just dump him into a well of weird, and it just gets deeper for six whole stories. That's the New Orleans saga. I'm working on the L.A. Troubles, because spoilers of the end of that series, he ends up going to L.A. Then I have a couple of steampunk stuff, The Galvanized Girl, which is kind yep. of a steampunk story that's got a feminist edge. Revenge of the Blood Red Maid is also a steampunk-ish kind of story, but I have been told it's more like you take Ocean's 11 and Ghostbusters and slap it into a steampunk Victorian setting. That's pretty much that story. I have a weird Western called Problem with Gruff Springs, where I take a character. He gets sent on a quest to find out where this stolen Confederate gold is being used to start up the new Civil War. And the last place he knows who they're at, where a place called Gruff Springs, he gets there and finds out there's more in those hills than just stolen gold. It gets pretty creepy weird. I write some Sherlock Holmes stuff, Sherlock Holmes and Shrieking Pits. That's well, when I got that gig, I was told I could write whatever I wanted to write, but I had to keep it in the canon. So I did. My editor was great. He is a Holmesian and kept me really, really in, you know, in that genre. Let's see, I also have Rumble, which is great fun. Imagine you've got this mining camp in the middle of the Gobi Desert, and suddenly you lose all communication with them. You send over satellites and find out the entire camp has been destroyed. So you send in mercenaries, and shenanigans happen. And
nice.
And I got a collection of short stories, horror short stories called Stone Baby. And it's just a bunch of a collection of short stories. Another story I have is called Perverse Muse. I was giving that away the last Southern Festival of Books. I ran out of books. I just printed off about 150 of them, and I started giving them away free.
Wow.
Because I really like that story. The Reverse Muse is a really fun story. It's about this woman, Amy Engler, who is a Poe scholar, and her thing is she's not so much interested in how Poe died. She wants to know why all the women in his life died, because that's what I was wondering. I was reading
right.
a biography of Poe.
Right.
Why? Mm-hmm. So I was talking to my friend Todd Kiesling about that, and I said, do you think he may have been like a vampire or something? And Todd's like, write that story. So I did, but he's not a vampire because it's boring. I went through a whole different thing. So anyway, what was really cool is I went to a lecture recently, a few weeks ago, where there was a guy there who gave a lecture about Poe, and he's a cousin, distant descendant of Poe, and I gave him a copy of that story. I was very nervous about that because I thought, I don't want to, this is kind of like I'm making fun of your people, and also saying that you're kind of a monster. But here you go. But I did it because I got goaded, I got peer pressured into it, to do it. I'm looking at my list here of books. Pretty much it. I've got out right now. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Wow.
But I do a whole, you name it. Again, you give me a contract. Like right now, I just got invited to do, it's a horror comedy anthology. So I'm working on that story. And that's due April 1st. But I'm working
very
on that
nice.
Story as well as another collection of short stories. It's called Politics of Children and Other Stories of Revenge. They're all revenge-based stories. So I'm having a lot of fun with that because I do love a good revenge story.
Holly said in the chat room, oh, Lord, I hear my to-read pile growing. So I echo that. That is fantastic.
I can just hear
that's
it growing.
Awesome. Yeah, that is. No kidding. I mean,
well,
that's a nice
Victorian
range.
And steampunk. You got me. You know, you say Victorian or Poe or, you got me. Yeah.
I do love, Revenge of the Blood Red Maid. It's really fun. The gig I got for that was they told me I needed to write a story, superheroes in a steampunk age. And I got that gig on a Sunday. My friend, Alan, Alan. Anyway, Alan Lewis Alan Lewis. Yeah, he was writing for Gilbert.
Alan Lewis.
Well, he contacted me on a Sunday and said, look, I need one more story for this anthology I'm doing. Can you write something? And I said, oh, I can try. What do you need? Superheroes in the steampunk age. Great. When do you need it? Friday. Okay, sure, no problem. So I cranked it out in 7 days. I was very proud of it.
Nice.
But then
Lord.
when the rights came back to me, I rewrote it because it needed some polishing. So when the rights came back to me 3 years later, I cranked it over and re-edited it and put it out to my beta readers and did all that, and then got a whole new, I just recently got a whole new cover for it, which is where all the money goes, the cover. So expensive. But a good cover is so important, guys. Oh, not only is editing and good cover, those should be the two things high on your list as a writer.
Amen.
A bad cover, you can have the best story in the world, but if your cover sucks,
you're not going to sell books.
People are just going to go, poof.
Got to stop my catching. It's got to involve the story somehow. I mean, if you put a dog in the front, please have a dog in the story. Don't false advertise. If you want something, it has to tell a little bit of what the book's about, have that
Here's
feel.
Here's a little marketing ploy. At the last Southern Festival of Books, people we were doing our show with, our little booth, they had a book that had a cat on it. And that drew people into our booth more than anything. Oh, my God, it's about cats. And they jumped on it. Well, and they were selling that thing for $20 a pop. And they were selling them like four or five at a time because people were buying them to give as gifts.
Oh, nice.
So that's a cat in your store. That's what you're saying. Just throw a cat in there, man.
Just throw a cat. Put a cat on the cover. Because in one of my books, Gunn Takes a Gander has a goose on the cover with wearing a fedora, and it gets people's eyes. But then they get upset because it isn't actually about a goose detective. It's just, he does find a gander in it. But and then I usually give those when if you buy two Jakes, you get a gun for free. That's kind of my spiel when I'm at a show. You buy two Jakes, you get a gun for free. Animals tend to attract people. I don't know what it is. So,
they do. They do. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
That is very true. Is sexy people. A sexy man or a sexy woman.
That too.
Sexy people on the cover.
College rippers,
I'm just going to put a cat and then attractive people on the cover and that's it. I'm not going to That's it.
Sex sells.
Oh, yeah.
Sex and cats.
Yep.
There you go.
And cats.
That's it. Sex, drugs, rock and roll, and kitties.
and kitties. Yeah. Kitties and titties. That'll be the name of our next anthology.
It. Kitties, and
kitties and titties.
Oh,
jeez. That's awesome.
That would sell. I'm telling you, that would sell. It would.
Oh, my God. It would sell like crazy.
It would.
Yeah, well,
you're giving me an
please.
Idea for a story now.
Kitties and titties. Okay.
Kitties and titties.
Oh, that's too funny. Ah, the creative
great.
Juices are flowing tonight. I tell you, with the ideas for new titles.
Do you participate in Nano, Nikki? Do you participate in Nano?
I do not.
No.
I have a big hang-up about Nano. Okay, I used to be a really big in the National Writers Group. I was years ago. I ran a lot of groups. And I grew to really, truly despise Nano, only because that meant on December 1st, or all the groups we would have in December, it would be all the people bringing their Nano stuff. People who never ever got involved in the group would suddenly show up with their Nanos and just slam them down on the table and expect to be critiqued. I'm like, hey, fine, great. I'll critique your thing. Oh, we'll give a really quick one because, you know, it's a really quick thing. But the deal is then you give them a critique, and then they get mad at you when you didn't tell them they were a pretty, pretty pony. Or you told them, hey, this is a really cool idea, now go back and rewrite it. They don't understand that writing
right.
is rewriting and rewriting and rewriting and rewriting. It's a lot
uh-huh.
of newbie writers.
Process.
And it's
That's
only
right.
been my, this is in my experience, was everyone who came wasted our time because they would come, get mad at us, and we never see them again. It's like, that's a waste of my time. So I got really tired of, but hey, if it gets you going, if it gets the juices flowing, man, knock yourself out. But for me, no. I'm busy working on too many things that I actually don't want to have to squeeze out word count. I don't get my panties wrapped around word count. I try to focus on the scene. I go by scene, by scene, by scene. What scene do I want to work on today and try to build a block? I mean, I build a story like I'm building a house, block by block by block. So
mm-hmm.
I just don't.
Exactly.
It's not my thing.
Right.
It's not my thing. And I know that Nano is great for some people, but I just think some people get their panties in a wad over it or think they're going to write the next great American novel. You're not. You're not. Maybe you, no, you're not. You're not. Because you're going to write maybe a really good seed that's going to need to be
mm-hmm.
worked on for a really long time. Write a good story
exactly.
is not easy. One of my biggest complaints was when I was in college and I took a godforsaken creative writing class, never take those, they're terrible. I took a creative writing class in college, and again, I was in my 30s, so I went back to school late. And I was taken aside by the teacher and asked to stop critiquing because I thought these people wanted to be writers. It didn't hit me. Oh, no, they've taken this because it's an easy A. They think it's an easy A class. Oh, shit, I didn't realize that. Okay, I'm stupid.
Mm-hmm.
It make me so mad. Boy, writing's easy. You just make shit up. It's not easy. No.
No, it's
literature,
not. No, it's not. Yeah.
Literature is hard. Yeah. Writing is hard. Creative storytelling is hard because our stories have to make sense. Life doesn't
right.
have to make sense.
Yep.
Life is just a chaotic shit show, and that's fine. But a good story has to make sense. So
yeah,
that's
exactly.
why writing is so freaking hard. You've got to have a reason for everything. And also, you know, good poetry, good, you know, it's a good syntax, all that, that's one thing. But, man, just having a story that makes sense, especially when you write stuff like I write the weird and the fantastical, you have to write, how do you make that make sense? It's really hard. You can only do that,
yep.
and it's hard.
Oh, I do understand.
Yes, yes it is. But I'm going to tell you, to be a serious writer, these new writers have to understand, to be a serious writer, you have to be able to take a critique, good or bad. You have to be able to take that and run with it, and that's how you grow. No one is a master. I mean, yeah, you
Nobody.
Can be great, but you don't know everything. You know, Tolkien, of course, didn't know everything. Yes, he was a master of the craft, but he didn't know everything. I mean, once we get to the point where we think we know it all, we need to quit.
You need to stop and pull back and go, okay, how far do I have my head up my own ass is what the problem
That's
here.
It.
No, it's just the way
That's
it is. But, I mean, of course, I've been in writers groups, and I've taken stories thinking this is going to blow them away, and I've, man, I can still remember the eyes like, oh, God, this thing. And then just being told that this story was bad and being hurt,
right.
being crushed. But then,
okay,
have a little depressive, cry a little bit, and then go back and read and go, yeah, you're right, this story does suck. And it does. I've gone back and read those things, and, yeah, this was like 10, 15 years ago, and, they sucked. But I was still you're still learning. Every story is new and different, and you always, always learn.
So, yep.
Absolutely. Yeah, you got to push 100%. Yourself constantly.
Oh, constantly.
And you have to read. Read. If you're going to be a great writer, you have to be a reader. Period.
That's a big thing. I always I met a guy once, so was at a writing thing again, and he was just like, no, I never read. I'm just too focused on my own writing. And I'm like, okay. Now that to me saying, your writing sucks. I bet it sucked. It did. It sucked. Because his head was up his own ass for so long. He didn't read other people's stuff. He didn't it just
right.
Yeah. It's ego. It's all about his ego. And you could tell this was a huge power trip for him, and he was just getting off on. I mean, I once John Irving. I went and saw him do a speech once, and the thing he said to me that I'll never forget was he said the sign of a hack writer, and every early novelist does this, is write about themselves. Don't write about yourself because you're not as interesting as you think you are. You're not. And
right.
I'm like, you're so right. I am not. I know I'm not. But I when you read people, especially first-time writers, I just recently did a thing for someone. I did an edit for someone, and it was so bad. And it was all about how great a person he was. I'm such a great person. And I'm just like, I don't know what to do with this. This is not good. there's maybe a bit of a really cool diamond in here somewhere, but you got to pull yourself out of this. You're not that interesting. Uh-huh. You're not that great. So the story comes first, not you.
Right.
Yep, absolutely.
Right.
And you did hit by one of my pet peeves, Nikki, because on Twitter, I see it all the time in the writing community there. There are tons of writers that openly say they don't read or have time for reading. Blows my mind, and it's one of my biggest pet peeves, and it drives me nuts. But
I understand.
Yeah, that's definitely
I was thinking
so
about
true.
This recently. When I was younger, I could come home, sit and crawl up in my bed with some, Snickers or whatever, and just read. I can't do that anymore. I got my day job. I got my family to take care of, a house. I'm a grown ass adult now. I've got adult shit to do. But you have to carve out just that little bit of time. My biggest problem is my TBR pile is so high. It's higher every day.
Yeah.
I'll see a video or something, go, oh crap, another book. Okay, and then stick it in my Kindle, and hope to God I'll remember to read it because I have so much on my Kindle.
I understand.
I've got a pile of physical. My Kindle's full.
Oh yeah. Oh my! My books are next to my bed, next to my toilet, in my Kindle, and also right here on my desk. I have books on my desk. When I go to my day job, I always put books in my backpack to take with me to read when I get bored, when things get a little lull during the day. And nowadays, how it is nowadays, is in an office environment. You're usually the only person there, so there's somebody to talk to. So you just kick back. My biggest problem is, of course, having to have distractions. We should talk about the distractions in modern life. I think a lot of older writers have to deal with. We've got so much more distractions now, podcasts and everything else, and things on my phone, my freaking phone. I actually put my phone away. I actually put it in the other room because you get that dopamine rush.
Yeah.
You know, you just pick up your thing and dopamine rush.
No, I have talked about this, Nikki, and that's actually something I addressed early, even before the big social media explosion. I decided years ago, before I had anything published, to have a separate computer that was not hooked up to the internet and make that strictly a writing space. And over the years, I mean, it's been great because I don't, like Holly can tell you, I don't go in with my phone. That computer is not hooked up online, so there's no temptation to check anything. And it is just strictly a writing computer. That's it. And it definitely has worked. I still use an old copy of Word on that. It's an old Power Mac.
How do you update your Word programming and all of that? I mean, How you update your Microsoft?
Well, when I'm
online.
Done, I just take it over and just convert to the modern, you know, the most current version of Word on my
okay.
regular, you know, office computer. Fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's no problem at all.
Oh yeah, my husband bought me a nice little laptop. He was very sweet. And bought me this Google Pixel Go thing. I hate it. I just hate it so much, and I don't use it because I hate the fact that if you want to use it, you have to hook up to Google, period. You cannot use this
right.
thing. It doesn't use Word. You have to use Google Docs, and I have it sitting up there, and it's still in its box. I tried. I'm sorry. I can't. I want to get a laptop. Now I work on a little desktop. I have my little – this is my office space. On the left here is where I work my day job, and to the right is where I work my writing job. So I'm always in this little nest of stuff. I've got books and things all around me. It's a little nest. So I'd like to get a new laptop eventually, but it'll be some little thing, at least 16 gig, because meh. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, sorry. Yeah, I've always wondered about that.
Yeah, my nest is made up of way too many CDs and vinyl in this surrounding.
You can barely walk in there. Steve's the only one that goes in there. I don't even go in there to clean. I do not bother his writing room. It is a mess. That's his chaos.
Brian and I share an office, but that side of the office is his. This side of the office is mine.
Yeah.
I don't touch his.
Yep.
He does not touch mine because I would kill him if he came anywhere over here. Because especially when I'm in the middle of a project.
Yeah.
Oh, don't touch my desk. When I'm in the middle of a project.
Mm-hmm.
How about you? When I'm in the middle of a project, things start crawling off my desk. And before you know it, I'm taking over most of the room because I get things and I have books and papers, and sometimes if I'm working on, like, for instance, when I was working on one of the Jake stories. It was the Boo Daddy story. I had a huge pirate ship right next to me because I needed it for, you know, inspiration and just to have it to have a pirate ship. So I had a huge pirate ship next to me, and I just tend to overtake things when I'm in the middle of a project. It tends to roll out. When you get done with a project, do you feel a horrible, intense need to clean?
Steve,
I do.
Don't.
I mean,
I have that need constantly because I am an OCD clean freak. So our office will share, and it's hard because Steve likes to pile things up in there. And if you have notes, you'll have this. And I'm like, listen, you can do that in your writing room. I don't care. You come in the office now. You're getting into my space. So, you know, when I dust off Steve, he'll be sitting there, and I'll take my duster and dust him off, too.
She does.
And
she actually
him.
Will
oh,
dust.
Oh, my gosh.
She'll dust my –
yeah,
I'll be typing. She'll
my
dust
ADHD
my
little
on.
Doom bags everywhere. That's what I have, my little Doom bags.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I do, too. I have Doom drawers. I put things away. So they're there, but it's out of sight, you know, but every once in a while my Doom pals get they'll start growing. I just last week cleaned off my printer, which I haven't seen in a long time because had so much shit out, but it was organized chaos, you know. I knew what was in what pal and where it was. I knew what was there. I just hadn't addressed filing it away or doing something with it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I was just noticing this recently is when I get done with a project, it's like a weird grieving process where I can take all the stuff from that project, file it away, put it away, and then I have to clean. It's almost like cleaning to start over again. And I just wondered if that was the only person who does that.
But, yeah, no.
I thought that was a southern thing. I don't know.
Nikki, in my defense, I will say that in the office, the only thing other than my desktop computer and monitor and everything on that desk is a crocheted Eddie Munson from Stranger Things doll that Holly's daughter made.
That's so cool.
That's the only thing
I
have.
God.
So it's not that cluttered. I'm really doing a good job.
Oh, my desk
is
a cluttered mess. It is, looks like a haunted salvage kind of junk store. I've got all kinds of little knicky-knacky skulls and weird stuff hanging around, and my recent Edgar Allan Poe thing. Yeah, I have everything. If I find something really cool, I'll just buy it and stick it on my drawer. Same thing there. My cabinet of curiosities.
Well, you could definitely tell with somebody's ADD, you know, or, you know.
So I have to have it. If I don't see it, it doesn't exist. That's why I have all of these post-it notes of everything I'm working on, because if I don't see it, it doesn't exist.
That's it.
I got these little
post-it notes. My daughter got me these little kitty cat post-it notes. They're paws and different things, and they say different things. And so I got post-it notes everywhere, imaginary notes everywhere.
She does.
You know,
that's
everywhere. Because if it doesn't, if I can't see it, it ceases to exist.
That's it. And I got the whole hotel layout for Imaginarium hangs. I have it taped, so it hangs down right there by my computer. So every day I go sit at my desk, I see it. I see the whole hotel.
Did you, Holly? Did you post the Vicky picture I've got of you just the other day? Because Nikki can see that.
No.
I have a terrible
office assistant, and she likes to sit on my chest. And the other day I was sitting there trying to work, and I was like, Steve could hear me over there griping because our backs were turned toward each other. I'm like, would you lay still? Would you sit down? I'm trying to work, blah, blah, blah. And I said, Steve, turn around and look at this. Well, what he did, here she is laying on my chest with her head looking over my shoulder at him. So he snaps a picture.
I got a great picture of it. And you can see all of Holly's post-it notes and convention layout paper packed up, and it's so funny because she's got to post it because the picture's classic. You see Vicky's little pointed ears looking at me.
Stuff, you know, I've got this huge vampire print on the wall. I've got like a gothic fairy in one place. My vampire only parking thing, and then I've got like my three little what are they from? Steve, my three little birds. They're not vultures.
Yeah.
They're, God, I can't think of
buzzards.
It. From
the buzzards,
Jungle Book.
Right?
You know, he says, what were they?
Buzzards?
They eat like
buzzards or vultures.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Buzzards. The three little buzzards. Yes, I have them. I have Marvin the Martian. I have my crystals, you know.
Of course.
A dragon.
Oh, yeah, well,
post that.
A dragon candle holder. Yeah, the dragons, you know.
Post that picture,
Well, my
Holly.
Day job, I have my computer, my day job here at my little desk. So when we have, like, meetings, like our monthly office meeting, we do it on Teams. I'm working from home. So, yes, they're going to see pretty much a lot of my desk. They'll see my little chicken leg things here. They'll see my Cthulhu, a lot of skulls. What else? Oh, yeah, some... Of course, Poe, all kinds of stuff, and they don't ask and I don't tell. So, it's a lot of people who I work with, they put a little fake thing in the background. I work with lawyers, so you know.
Oh, I know. When Sandy reminded me, she's like, "Ravens? Oh yes, Sandy, I have plenty of ravens. There's raven pictures on the wall. There's a raven voodoo doll that a friend of mine got me. My granddaughter's named Raven after Poe." That's, you know, Nevermore. That's what you named after. And so, you know, I love ravens. I love gothic things. So, yeah, I've got ravens there, too.
But my people that I work with know, they just kind of run with it, you know. So,
Yes. Yeah, same here. Everybody that Zooms with us knows, we got all kinds of crazy stuff here.
If I do a podcast, I usually have Mr. Bone Daddy's, this big skeleton, life-size skeleton. I have him in the background. I usually have him set up for whatever we're doing, like a hat or a little costume. Once I had a tuxedo on him, so we were doing like a tuxedo show. It was this podcast thing I was doing. So he's in the background, Mr. Bone Daddy. And I have him right there right now. There he is back there because he's still actually recuperating from Halloween. So we had him coming out of the crypt. So,
nice.
Halloween all year round.
In my life, yes. We have skulls and all kinds of stuff. And, Halloween is kind of it's inside your heart.
That's right. And I buy stuff now to use as decor year round.
I know what I love about September and October. I can go and buy things I'm going to use in my house. Are you talking? Are we crazy? Or I can use this at the next time, at the next whatever convention I'm going to do. I can use it for booth decor. I'm always looking for new booth decor.
Yeah. Yes, that's another tidbit to tell new writers. Think about your presentation at conventions.
Oh,
you brought up a good one. Yes, booth decor. That's a big one.
Yep.
I'm always amazed. I go to a convention, and there'll be usually people who've never done a con before, and they'll not have anything for their table. They're just a table. I mean, you know, tablecloth, stuff. You got to have swag. Yes, invest in some swag. Trust me, invest in swag. People love that stuff. And just, yeah, and have a decor. Have, of course, a Southern Festival of Books this year. I had this whole thing set up I was going to do. I spent a little bit of money. I spent about a year preparing for it. I was looking at these really cool walls. I had these really great lights. I had this great raven lamps all around. It was going to look great.
Nice.
And then, well, it didn't happen because it turns out they changed the layout. I mean, I've been doing this show for 15 years.
Oh.
I thought I had the layout, but no, they changed the layout this year. So there weren't any walls. There was no walls for me to put my wall coverings on. I was like, okay, time to adapt. So we adapted, and we adapted, and I got my money back for the electrical, because you pay extra for electrical and all that. But it was just like, I was so disappointed. I had this vision of what I wanted our booth to look like, and de nada. But I do have a really great, huge banner that just says, "Do you like it weird?" And we had that on the back wall, and that drew people in. They're like, what?
Very nice.
That and the cat book drew people in. So, and giving away free stuff.
And that's the one in Bowling Green, correct, if I'm right?
No, this is a Southern Festival of Books. Does it Legislative Plaza every year, 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Down there.
Put on by the state.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it's great. Me and Alan have been doing that for, decades. But,
we got to get you back to Imaginarium, honey, since we got new venue.
No, I did the very first one a gajillion years ago. And then, I know. There's always usually something. When's it happening this year?
Grown a lot.
July?
Yeah, next July.
July 14th or 16th.
Okay, I'll look and see what my schedule is then. So I only have two things happening so far in 2022. I'm going to AuthorCon. I'm so excited. Those tables sold out in 22 minutes. 22 minutes. Tables sold out.
Well,
I was there,
you,
man.
Please,
I actually, I had tickets to go to a burlesque show that night. And I told Brian, I'm sorry, but I need to get to one of these tables. So I'm sitting here waiting, man. As soon as they went online, bam, I got me a table. I'm looking forward to that.
Nice.
That's in Virginia. And then I'm going to.
That's what I said. There'll be a day that'll happen. We're not quite there yet, but we did sell out last year.
We did sell out.
And I mean, we couldn't cram no more. We had people cram because we got an artist alley now. We got a creative alley, which is like throughout the whole place. And then we've got the expo hall too. So, it was crazy. We have people everywhere.
Okay, Nikki, I know why I got confused. I got confused. The Bowling Green one is called the Southern Kentucky Book Fest. So that's why I got confused. Yeah, it's called
Southern
Festival
of Books
Book
is put on by the Tennessee Humanities. It's a state thing. So they have money coming in through the government. So it's really cool. You get a chance to go there. It's really cool. Not only do they have a lot of good vendors and stuff, which is fine, but they also have a lot of authors who are there giving speeches and talks and that kind of stuff. And, I mean, real, legitimate peoples. I tried. I don't seem to be of their ilk. They never let me be on that kind of stuff. So, they're not real. Uh-huh. Let's put it this way. They're not real indie friendly. So, they prefer
the
traditional publish.
We're indie. We try to creators of all types, all genres, and we've got, so many more like musicians now because the songwriting aspect of it. And then the game, we've got the International Film Festival all areas of writing you could possibly think of. And on indie up to traditional, I mean, there's traditional published there too, but, we try to keep
hybrid
people there that are approachable and that, you know, newbie writers can go talk to the same day best-selling author, you know, that will talk to them, that will mentor.
Yeah, I think it's because the Southern Festival of Books is funded by the state, is a government-funded thing. So they have to stay more traditional, so which means they're not going to be able to really expand and become more indie. I mean, actually, Alan and I are able to have a table because we've worked with them for so long. We've kind of like grandfathered in because they don't want independent authors.
Right.
So I was like, okay, which is great. We get in. But, we always sell our books. We always make our money. So it's the, on the financial end. And it's great fun, and they're really good people to work with. But, yeah, if you're looking for edgy, no. No. You're looking for anything that's kind of on the outside or thinking outside the box, no, no, no. They don't want that.
Yeah.
They want literature.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right.
I do not write literature. I write fun things people get murdered in. So, yeah.
Right. Well, I like people not to have their things restricted. You know, that's the thing about indie versus traditional. Yeah, you can do some traditional, whatever, but, you know, do some. You got to keep doing indie if you want your voice to be heard. And you should be able to write what you like. You know, stories that you like. There'll be somebody out there that likes it too. They'll read it. There's groups, niche groups of anything you could possibly imagine. There's somebody out there that'll love your story.
Yep, exactly. It's not that special. Trust me. If I like it, someone else is going to like it. When I used to do all those groups, I used to tell them, write stories that you want to read, that you like to read. Also, write stories you like writing, because you're going to be in that headspace. I mean, I've written stories that I was really glad to be done with, mainly because the headspace was so nasty. And I was very glad to be done with it. I'm like, okay, when I get finished with this story, I'm writing, I don't know, anything that's light, okay? Anything.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
But, yes, if you're going to write this story, be someplace in a brain space that you're going to want to be in for a while. It's like being an actor. I mean, I know a lot of actors who have a problem who, you know, Evans Peters talked about being in, you know, Jeffrey Dahmer, how he had to...
I was just getting ready to say that. He stayed in character.
Oh, well, he did a lot of research. I watched the show because I'm a huge true crime fan, and I think he did great. I mean, my only complaint is he almost made Jeffrey Dahmer too adorable because he's just so adorable. But he had done a lot of research.
He did, and he said he stayed in character. I read this the other day. He did an article with somebody, and he said it was hard because he actually stayed in that headspace so he would not break character. And I said, can you imagine? He probably happened to get therapy now because he really had to go to a dark place. Spooky. Yeah, it was
very
spooky how well
he talked about detoxing from Jeffrey Dahmer. He says once he got done, he was able to Dumb and Dumber and a lot of really stupid comedies, anything lighthearted. Is what he watched. Oh, Step Brothers. He likes to watch Step Brothers over and over and over again.
Oh, that's a good
he says,
one.
That's what I just whatever
one.
I got to do to detox. But for the role, he did stuff like he wore weights in his shoes so that he would have that gait that Dahmer had. Acting to me is always fascinating because when actors get into a role and they really have to get into that headspace. Same thing for writers. But we have to get into the headspace of about five different people or how many people are in your book. You've got to get in that headspace, every one of them, and try to keep them and try to stay sane. So,
Holly sees it. When I come out of the writing room, I mean, I am kind of spaced out, literally.
Yeah.
It takes me a minute to kind of recalibrate.
I'm ignoring for
it really
a while.
Does.
I'll give him a few minutes, unless it's like something major. I give him a few minutes because I know he's going to start telling me about it. He'll tell me about a
you
scene
think
he
I'm
just
on
wrote.
Something, though.
You know, today he came out and was like, well, you come out today and you were like, you walked in the kitchen. You're like, ooh, that was heavy. Ooh, that was heavy.
Yeah.
And you just looked so distraught, you know. And I'm like, you know.
Yeah, you have to go there. Yeah. Nikki knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah,
one time my husband found me, I was just crying. I'm talking really big snot bubbles, just crying. And he came and walked and was like, what? And I could not talk. I was just, and he thought that maybe somebody had said something online, someone hurt me or something. He was so upset. He was like, who do I got to kill? And I had to say, and he just closed the lid of the laptop and said, we're going for a walk. I said, it's 7 o'clock outside. I'll take my gun. We lived in East Nashville at the time. And we will go for a walk. We had to just get away because I did.
Right.
And it was...
Yeah. I understand.
But see, my husband's on a rider, so he's my rock. He's kind of my anchor point. So he keeps me sane. And he knows when I'm he often wants to do, like a panel for the other side of the desk, partners of riders. The things you got to deal with, like, he'll be talking to me, and he'll go, you're not here, are you? And I'm not. I'm thinking about a story.
Oh, my God. He needs this to me all the time. I'll be talking to him, and, you know, I'm ADD, so I'm like, all over the place.
Here's the fact,
you know, my neurodivergent brain's everywhere. I'm like, pop, go from one thing to the next, and he'll just be staring off into space with this look on, and I'll say, did you hear a damn thing I said? He'll say, he'll try to say what I said, and I'm like, that's not what the hell I was talking about. No.
Don't. I am. Well, especially when my kids were much younger, I would tell them, hey, okay, mommy's going dark for a while. So unless you're bleeding from the eyeballs, don't bother me. Okay. I'm going to be gone for a bit. And both of my kids, they're both writers. So they understand. They went, gotcha. No problem. But yes, when I'm in the middle of a story, I'm really deep in a project. Oh no, I am not here. Mommy is maybe here 10% of the time. You will have to feed me. I can't feed you. The housework goes to hell. Everything around me goes to hell until this thing is done.
That's right.
And then I'll clean it later because it's just housework. Trust me, we live in a world of entropy. Everything's falling apart anyway. Don't worry about it. So, yes,
it'll be there.
I think it's going to be hard. Do you think that's why most writers have a lot of divorces or can't stay in relationships?
100%.
We're not real good people.
100%. Me and Sandy Linder were talking about it in the chat room. She was talking about, you know, she wished she had people that understood that. And I said, yes, it's unfortunate, but a lot of creatives do not have partners that are creatives and that do not understand, don't care to learn or understand, because you don't live in the real world. You live in your own little worlds. And you don't always know exactly what's going on in the real world or what's around you because you are in your own little book at that time, whatever you're writing. That's where you're at. That's where your headspace is. And that's why I tell Steve, I'm like, you're out of the loop, man. You're out of the loop. You don't get it. I'm like, you're out of the loop.
No, I'm really lucky. Brian has his own creative ventures and stuff. But, yes, he understands when I am not here. I'm really focused on something. But also he understands that I need to do this because when I don't write, I'm even worse. That's when you get depressed. You get really – I just go down really dark holes. So he'll even ask me, have you written anything lately? I was like, oh, crap. No, I've been too busy. Yeah. No, you need to put it down and just go do something. I don't care what. Work on something because you're getting kind of bitchy. So, I'll go work on something because I do. I get very, very – I find myself falling down a really dark hole. Just,
So. Because your brains have to create. It has to, or it builds up like a tea kettle.
Yes.
It's just like
looks
a
like
tea
my serotonin
kettle.
Levels.
All those characters
are
going blah, 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 you know. And they're going to explode. You're going to blow, you know.
You start feeling guilty. You really do. You start feeling guilty. I have to go make dinner. Yeah, but you could do it. Now, I've got to, as an adult, you do have things you have to do. I'm sorry, creative muse who doesn't understand that things have to be done. So, but you do. But anyway, I always try to keep at least a few hours. I can't write like 12 hours a day. 2 to 3 hours is my max. And then I have to stop and do something else. Because I'll just wear myself out.
Right.
That's one thing about age. I'm finding at age, as I get older, I will want to do an armload of things, and I really can only do two. Okay, pick out of this list the two things you're actually going to get done today, because you're not going to do all those things, sweetie. It's not going to happen. I just don't have that kind of energy anymore.
Right.
But creative, when you're creating, don't you feel like energy? When you're creating, you feel energetic. I feel like it's a loop. I'm giving, but I'm getting. Mm-hmm. When I do other stuff like housework and stuff, you're not getting anything back. You're just pouring things in. But when you're creating, especially when you're creating and it's going well, okay, I often refer to writing like shooting up heroin. When you find that vein, and you just go whoosh, it's great. But sometimes you got to jab a lot of skin to find that vein. And those are really bad days.
Sometimes you really got to
dig.
That's a great analogy. I love it. I'm going to have to use that. That's so fun. Yeah,
it's like shooting up heroin.
It is. I mean, I love it. When you find a vein, it's great, but boy, those
come
days.
You've got to do some panels for me, Nikki. You've got to do some workshops for me. I love your analogy.
Oh, my God, yeah.
I love that. It's so much fun.
That's a title for a workshop. It's like shooting up heroin.
the heroin workshop.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Oh, this is good. I can see it. I can actually see
it.
That's great.
But it's true. It's a rush.
Mm-hmm.
It sucks. And then when you come down from that, you got to have a few minutes when you come out of that headspace to get your head wrapped around reality again and gripping.
Yeah.
But then you're still thinking about it, because I know it's what Steve will sit there.
Oh, yeah.
And he's still thinking about it, because I see his wheels are turning. And I'm like, you're not listening to a damn thing I'm saying. And then he'll say, I didn't tell him something. I'm like, oh, yes, I did. You wasn't listening because you were thinking about your character or, you was writing, you know.
Or a plot point or something that's not going well. How can I make this happen? That'd be really cool for a gin to do. I've done that. I'll be listening to a podcast and go, wait a minute. That's a really cool idea for that gin story I want to work on. I'm start writing down notes, whatever. But it is true. You do need a few minutes or a few little bit when you're after a bit too. That's why walking, exercising. I'm a big Pilates freak. I try to do Pilates at least once a day or so. And just to go somewhere and have a little thin blonde woman beat me up for an hour, that basically helps me keep my head together. So, yeah.
Nice.
But you have to. That's something else I think a lot of writers have to understand. You have to take care of your body. You got to take care of this meat sack. You're stuck in it. You must take care of your meat sack.
Yep.
And
because
I find
constantly will kill you if that's all you
sitting
do.
Sitting is the new smoking. Sitting is the new smoking. And trust me, our job is sitting.
Yep.
So I make myself get up and walk around because I find I hurt. It's like, my body has melded to this chair, and I can't move anymore.
Yeah, I can't do it. Well, mentally it gets to me. Steve knows this. I cannot sit 6 or 8 hours straight and just sitting.
No.
I cannot do that.
I have to get up and go do laundry.
Or I have to get up and go read. Or I've got to get up and play my Bubble Wits on my phone. Or, I've got to do other things. Yeah, I have to. I'm sporadic. I might punch in a good 3 or 4 hours, but then I got to get up and do stuff, and then I'll come back later.
Yes.
But
when I'm stuck at the office, I'll get up and like pace in my little cube like a tiger in a cage. I can't go outside. Okay, I work at the TPAC building, and the Tennessee State Library, Tennessee State Museum used to be downstairs. So if I got really bored and I got nothing to do, I would go downstairs and just wander around the museum, which was awesome. It was so cool. But now they've moved it, so now I've got really nowhere to go. I mean, when it's nice, you can go outside and wander around, but a lot of woo girls, so many woo girls. I understand that. I need to move. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to move. That's why I always tell Steve, I'm like, you got to move. You got to go do something. I don't care if you run up down the stairs 10 times. If you don't get a workout in, run up down the stairs 10 times. Do something.
Well, we are animals. We are animals.
Yeah.
Animals need to
That's
move,
true.
And I do. And it helps my depression. It helps everything for me. Pilates has been kind of my godsend to do that. Again, it's just going and having somebody beat me up for an hour. Fine, whatever. I'll do that. But it's good for me. Mm-hmm. I need that. I used to go to a gym, and no, I'd do like 15 minutes and go, okay, I'm done. No, now I have a trainer who actually basically tells you what to do and then critiques you. So, you bastard. I'm paying for this? So, yeah, it's cool. It's fun.
Very nice. Yeah, Sandy, yeah, and you're right. Yeah,
Sandy said she got one of them desks that was on clearance at Office Max that she could stand. And
yeah,
I'd love
desk.
To have
Electric
one of them.
Desk.
Love to have. Because I'll tell you, at Office Max, when mm-hmm. I was nursing, I used to do nurses. I used to chart because I'm an old nurse. I'm not. Mm-hmm. We didn't chart on computers. We hand wrote everything. Hence mm-hmm. why I have carpal tunnel. But
yeah.
I stood and charted because I knew if mm-hmm. I sit down, I was going to get stiff. I was going to hurt. So, you know, because I was on my feet all the time. So I stood. And other nurses be like, why don't you sit down? I said, because I'll hurt and I'll get tired.
But I won't be able to get back up. Yeah, the
That's
younger
exactly
lawyers
right.
all
like,
have
no.
standing desks. Yeah. I've
yep.
noticed that the younger lawyers all have that standing desk. The older ones still sit, but the younger ones, no.
Right.
And they'll be actually doing things at their desk, like doing little walks or whatever, because they understand, I got to keep moving or I'm going to just stiffen up and feel like shit. That's my thing is I'm going to feel like crap. I'm not going to be able to walk or I got to be able to move in case the zombies come. So, you know.
Yes, exactly.
Right. It's coming. It's a common.
Since your last visit to the show, that now I actually believe that could, may, who knows, that maybe could happen in the
public. Hey, man,
after
let me tell
time.
You.
Yeah.
Oh. It's coming,
man.
It's coming.
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't doubt anything at this point.
Mm-mm. No. Mm-mm. No, no, no. We know that aliens are real. My very favorite thing is the government
yep.
comes out and goes, yep, aliens are real. And everybody just goes, I don't care. I just don't care.
Yeah,
I'm too tired.
So they just dump it on us.
So
during a pandemic, you know, you know, aliens are real.
We don't care.
We're like, move on
with our lives now. I just love that. I love the fact
the
that we dump this thing, and people are going like,
okay.
Whatever.
Whatever.
I mean, the apocalypse could happen. We'd all be like, finally,
okay.
just get this
whatever.
Over. I'm just tired. I don't want to have to go back to work tomorrow.
Like, just get it over. You know, just eat my brains, zombie, because
don't
I'm
even.
Tired. You know?
Yeah, I have friends who are like, they're already prepared. I'm just going to get bit. I'm going to get bit and start, you know, be a zombie because screw it.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of being the survivor looks like way too much trouble.
It's too much trouble and effort, and I just thank God it in me. I'm tired. Just make me a zombie, and I'll go on my way.
I like to think I'd
don't
be a Carol, but I know I won't. I'll get tired and bored really quick. So, yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Think about it. No internet, no nothing. No, I mean, it's just you and a bunch of other people. No running water. Ugh. It's going to get stinky real
yeah,
fast.
Oh, that'd be a mess.
Mm-hmm. No. I think about it a lot.
Century,
so.
Yeah, that'd be like the 16th century, the royal
court. Oh, yeah. We're going back to medieval times. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Nobody's... They did. Pissed in the corner and, you know, did their thing. And oh, God. Yeah, it was nasty. And we're on a lovely bridge because the lice was so bad. Well, let's just wear wigs. It'll help.
Everyone had lice. Everyone had lice and fleas and all the things. That's just what it was, especially of European descent, all the Europeans. Yes, we all were nasty.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't bathe. And, thank you. No, thank you. Oh, my God.
No, the
you didn't drink water
did not
kill you.
I forget what king it was. It was one of the Henrys. It seems like it was Henry VIII. I think they said he only bathed, like, twice in his life.
Twice, at least twice a year. But he died. When he died, oh, my God,
like
he was a nasty
was
mess.
Yeah.
Yeah,
course.
I mean,
it's
he had, like, these open sores on his legs that would never heal. They were constantly pouring pus out of it. Ugh, nasty. No, I know. Thank you.
Yeah,
I have no desire to time travel. None. The past sucks. It just sounds terrible. It's one of my great fears, time slipping.
I want to go back.
I could visit and come home when I wanted to.
And then come home. That's right.
Yeah,
I don't
Victorian
want to get
era,
stuck there.
As long as you were rich, if you're rich, white, and had a penis, yes, Victorian era was great. But for everybody else,
yes.
It pretty much sucked. So
that's
go
true.
Back as a man,
commoners,
a rich man.
Yeah, the commoners
oh, no.
had it rough. Wouldn't want to be a commoner, not at all.
I wouldn't want to be a rich, well, if you're a rich woman, fine, because you could still make your own
right.
way as long as you're a rich woman. Just don't marry. If you marry, you're screwed because you're going to take your money.
Oh, yeah.
But no, if you're rich.
He takes everything.
Uh-huh. Oh, mm-hmm. yeah. Well, you marry rich, then kill him and take his money.
Yeah, you'd have to kill him because then you become a baby factory. And
yeah, you
got to
kill him quick.
But it, yeah.
it was so
yeah.
easier to kill people back then. My God, arsenic was freaking
oh,
in the wallpaper.
It, right? It would have
yeah.
been a great aid to be a serial killer because there
oh,
was
yeah.
no forensics.
Oh.
You could just off people all the
forensics
time.
Forensics was so
I have a
bad
tattoo
back
of,
then.
Well, I have a tattoo of Aqua Tofana. Me and my daughter got matching tattoos. And
mm-hmm.
the late Miss Tofana, I'll get it out in a minute, she was like 1500 Italian lady, and she used to hand out poison, this herbal poison,
yes.
to wives that wanted to off their mean husbands. They wanted to get rid
yes.
of them. So she made these poisons. And, yeah, we've got a tattoo of the vial and, like, herbs and coming out of it. And, yeah.
Even closer to our time, after World War I in Hungary, a lot of the guys came back from the war, and they had PTSD, what we'd call PTSD now. And then the women were like, you know, I don't think I really want this guy back. So they were just killing him. But first they would get life insurance on them. This is when life insurance
oh.
first started even becoming a thing, and then killing them. And the problem with
wow.
that little thing scheme, problem with their scheme was they started killing other, they started killing for like money, and they got busted. But it was a thing. It was just a thing. Women have been doing it forever, so men should
yeah.
always understand. Don't fuck with us. We make.
That's
I cook
it.
Your dinner. I cook your dinner. You're gonna give me crap. I cook your dinner.
Well, I know people be like, "Did you poison this? Did you?" And I'm like, "I'm eating it, idiot. If I went, you know, it'd be different if I wasn't eating it. I'm eating it."
Nah, it's okay.
But I'm like,
no, just here.
No, I always say, "Fuck around and find out." You know, don't
fuck around.
Don't.
And find out. Here's your plate. I made this special just for you. Oh my God, I'm gonna go on a maybe.
Oh, he wouldn't eat it. He wouldn't. He'd be looking at me like, no, you take a bite. You take a bite first. I know your witchy ways. You take a bite first.
If Brian has come home, I'll have been surrounded by all these books about poison. I'm doing research for a story, but and he's just like, okay, yeah. He just walks away, so okay, whatever. That's just what it is. If you're being married to a person who writes books and stories about murder, well, that's what we have to do for research. And I'd never do it. At least I'd never
no.
get caught anyway. I just think I wouldn't get caught. I don't know.
That's what said.
So,
you know, you gotta fear a woman that watches all these crime, the true crime things and serial killer things. Steve's like, I just don't get it, but I don't trust you because he knows me, my daughter, and my daughter-in-law. We all love these shows, and it's like, yeah, we could do away with you, and nobody would ever find you.
Yeah,
we
my daughter actually comes over to me and sometimes and asks me, can you turn down your murder podcast? Because it's kind of get freaking me. She doesn't like it. Brenna doesn't like murder podcasts. My son, he's okay with it. My husband, definitely, no, he does not like any of that. I dig them. I dig a good murder podcast.
Yes.
I'm just like, yes,
yeah.
that's how they did that. Or the ones that don't you get mad at? You're like, oh, you dumb bitch. Oh, I mean, I don't want to
yeah.
victim
it's
shame,
like,
but doggone it. How stupid are you?
Yeah.
Never go to a second location. What are you doing?
Why did you do this?
Right.
Why are you doing this? Although,
so
I was watching the Jeffrey... how can you... I was watching the Jeffrey Dahmer thing. It was like, again, they made him so adorable. I was like, come on, Jeff, don't. You know he's going to kill the people. You know he's going to. But you're just like, come on, man. This one's nice. Aw, Jeff, come on. Damn, Jeff.
Jeff, come on.
He's sweet, Jeff. He really likes you. He's not going to leave you.
Come on.
Come on, Jeff. So,
they're looking for the alternate ending. Yeah, looking for the alternate history ending.
Yeah. That's what's going to happen.
Well, think about
the train wreck you couldn't look away from. You just couldn't look away. Evan Peters did so well.
He did. My God. Well, think about this. If on some other timeline, some other other universe, there's a Jeffrey Dahmer who simply became a taxidermist or became a biologist. And could you imagine that poor guy having to look at this Jeffrey Dahmer? Like, what did what? What the hell? Yeah. I love to think about multiverses, the idea of a different person on different lines looking back at themselves and going, I do what? No, I would never do that. Because, well, you know, that Dahmer... Hey, boy, that Dahmer, he was screwed. And it was really set up with the Dahmer thing is that we all knew a Dahmer. Did you? I mean, I've known Dahmers. I've known guys like that you're like, I would not be surprised if we find out that guy's a serial killer. You know, so.
Yep. Well, they say
it's because you're
weirdos. We passed at least one in our lifetime. Because of the way that our circles run. That you're always, you're going to pass and run into one at least in your lifetime. And you're not, you don't know about it, but you're going to talk to one or run into one, you know.
You never
know.
You
have no idea they are, but,
Well, if you run into, like being a horror writer, you run in some really kind of weird circles, and you meet a lot of weirdos. Oh, this is a writer. Yeah, you're going to meet people that I'm not surprised this guy probably has a little child's heart in a jar somewhere. I'm not surprised by that at all.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's true. And I say it's healthy for the horror writers to write because you can live out your fantasies or kill your enemies in your books. You can be, you know, live through your books.
Yeah.
You can write it down, you know, spill it all on the page and never get your hands dirty. And it's a beautiful thing.
I have a theory that all writers are either trying to kill or save someone over and over and over again in every story.
Yeah.
And I think that that's true in a lot of stories, that they're either trying to kill someone or save someone over and over and over again. Someone from their past, something or some idea or whatever. I know I've done it. I've saved people that did not get a fair shake, and I gave them a fair shake in my story. They, you know, because I could do that. I'm God. In my stories, I am God, and I can give want to give a fair shake. I'm kind of bourgeois like that. I like for my heroes to win. Well, this world is cruel, and sometimes people don't get what they deserve, you know? And as gods, we can make people get what they deserve. So
that's it. You have great power in the art of, you know, the typing or holding the pen. Great
just,
power.
Yeah, this is my story. I can, and if you piss me off, I can kill you terribly. I've done that. I was at work. This guy called. He was just terrible. I pretty much got almost PTSD from him because he kept calling and kept calling and kept calling, was just yelling at me and screaming at me and cursing at me. And I was actually shaking by the end of the. Anyway, so I went home. It was on a Friday, and I thought, okay, I got to do something. I can't let this guy fuck up my hotel, my weekend. And I decided, you know what? I want to kill this guy. I needed to. I was writing this one scene. It's in the Jackie Shinheji story. I think it's the Boo Daddy story. I decided to take him, put him in that character, and I kill him in the most graphic, horrible way. And it was very cathartic. I got it out of me. Well, that Monday I went back to work, and the commissioner came to me and said, hey, I heard you some problems, yada, yada. He said, from now on, you have my permission. If anyone curses at you, you can just slam the phone on them. And I said, it's fine. It's cool. I killed him. Everything's good. He's like, excuse me, what? I said, it's just in a story. I was writing. I killed him. I killed him really, really, really bad.
My hands are free.
I'm done now. But I often wonder about that guy. I mean, really, how sad and pathetic are you that you have to get your jollies out of calling somebody, an absolute stranger, and making their lives hell?
Because people are so miserable in their own life, that's the only gratification they get by dragging other people down to their misery. And when you don't give them the time of day, that pisses them off even worse. When you're like, you're not going to bother me. I'm just going to keep trucking on. Screw you.
I've gotten much better.
That's
because back then I was a much softer soul. I don't know why. I've just kind of gotten harder.
Just being in reception.
Like, menopause makes you really, really really crunchy. Anyway, so people don't bother me. Because I may have a lot of people call and start yelling at me, and I just go, okay, you done?
What
can I help you?
Have a nice day.
I want to help you, but I can't help you until you quit screaming at me, okay? Okay, so what's the problem? And then by the time they finally calm them down, we can't help you with that because we have absolutely no control over that. That's not our division. So let me tell you, I really will try to help them. And if I can't help them, I just, bye. But, yeah, I work for the state. So you get a lot of people who think that they can call in and abuse us. And go right ahead. I don't care. I just work here,
and
man.
And it's not your fault. It ain't like you caused it. That's why, you know, customer service is bad. You know, I'll be irritated with something. Steven does it, too. We'll call and we'll be like, I know it's not your fault, but I'm irritated.
Yeah, we're careful.
And I'm not
we're
taking that out on
that.
You. However, I'm pissed off about, you know, the whole situation, but I know it's not your fault. I'm not yelling at you personally.
I make that clear, too. I always do.
Yeah, because I don't want them to think I'm yelling at them. I don't want to make them upset
because I've been on that side of the phone. I've been on that side of the table. Mm-hmm. I know what it's like. So, yeah. I mean, all writers have day jobs. Very few of us, you know, make a career. I can't, not yet anyway. So I have my day job, and, you know, I understand. I've worked retail. Man, trust me, I think everyone who lives in a capitalist society should have to put at least 3 years of retail experience.
It's awful.
I think, and they should have at least 2 Christmas seasons under their belts. Yes. Everyone should have to suffer a Christmas.
Oh, I did service desk, and I've done layaway at Walmart in the olden days before they got the computer systems, and it sucked.
Oh yeah, I've done retail, and so when I go into retail, I give everybody just I know that look, I know that 1,000-yard stare. I've been there, know what it's like. And Christmas is hell. I learned to hate Christmas a lot. I mean, I still break it in hives when I hear the Barry Manilow Christmas album. That's all we played in that little boutique I played in over and over again.
Mariah freaking Carey. The demon.
Last year,
the demon
I went
woman.
Through an entire season not hearing that fucking song, and now I've heard it 12 times in the past 3 days. I am so sick of it.
Oh, Christ. I will puncture my eardrums. I can't take it. I can't take her screeching. I can't stand her.
Oh, my God.
Oh, it's bad.
It's like every other TikTok
so
is
upset.
Making fun of that. I just, I went, to, oh. But now I'll find myself humming it, and I'll go, stop it, oh, my God.
No, never.
So,
It's like nails on a chalkboard times 10. I just can't take it. I can't handle her screeching. I just want to punch her in the face.
You break all that plastic.
Well, maybe one day, Nikki, you can find your way back to being a fanalo again. Maybe it'll wear off, and you can like Barry again.
Oh, my God. So sad. But no, poor Barry. I know. But no, it was that and the soundtrack to Somewhere in Time. We had to listen to that. It was always on always. That always constantly. It was terrible. But no, Barry Manilow is the worst. That freaking song about it, Baby, It's Cold Outside, how rapey it is. But have Barry Manilow be singing the rapey song. It's just disgusting.
Yeah.
This is before he finally came out. It's like, dude, you are not talking to a chick, okay? So,
the kids always said that. When they were little, they'd be like, Mother, that song's a little rapey. You know, they were not, when they got to middle school, they're like, it's a little rapey. And I'm like, but it's a cute little song that they sing. No, it's rapey. Listen to it. And then I'm like, well, now you've ruined it for me. I thought it was cute, but it's not cute.
Yeah.
many, many years ago when Phantom of the Opera first came out, I went to see it in L.A., and I loved it. I became a huge Phantom freak for a long time. So when it finally came, many, many years, decades later, my kids are in their 20s, and it came to Tennessee, and I'm like, oh, my God, I can send you to go see Phantom. This is so great. And I went, I gave them tickets to go see Phantom, and they came out, and their one thing was, that was really rapey, Mom. That was just really rapey. And now I can't listen to Phantom of the Opera because all I hear is, yeah, you're right, that really is rapey. That is crazy rapey.
You know, now we look back, it was beautiful then, but now he's like a stalker and all this stuff.
I was a child. I was like 24 when I saw that thing, so I was a child. I'm an old crunchy woman now, and I'm going like, ew. Dude, seriously?
Yeah.
God, this is a controlling son of a bitch. So, no. But then again, she was kind of using him to do it. She's kind of a bitch, too.
Yep.
Everybody's a bitch. They have a poor Raul who's just an idiot. But,
yep.
No, I loved it. I was a huge Phantom freak. It broke my heart.
Well, I love Lestat, so, you know, I'm not a good judge as far as freaks, as you know. So, you know. Yeah, he's a little abusive, little, you know.
I remember reading that book back in the 80s when it first came out, and my biggest takeaway from that book was I loved the triangle of Lestat and Louis and Claudia, because you had Lestat who loved being a vampire. Loved it. Loved the power. Dug it. He's a hedonist. And you've got Louis who hates it because he's a romantic and he's pretty much an Apollonian. He's always thinking way, way too much. And then you've got Claudia, who is the only true vampire of this triangle because she's never done anything else.
Right.
She's
That's
the only
true
vampire. And I love that triangle that they had of that in the book. It was that's what I really loved about it.
It was fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I was also doing my vampire. I was about 14, 15. I was a huge vampire freak.
I've been a vampire freak my entire life, from childhood on. I don't know any other way.
I loved vampires. I still like them, although I got to say, man, What We Do in the Shadows, man, I love the show, but it kind of ruined vampires for you. Because they are kind of stupid, aren't they? Can you have a vampire that's not dumb?
Gloriously. Yeah, Nandor the Relentless.
Last
season was a really hit-and-miss episode. It was all because there wasn't a Colin Robinson. I didn't realize how much they need that character. They need Colin Robinson. And we all know Colin Robinson. I work with several Colin Robinsons.
Many. Yes.
I used to have one in the cubicle next to me, and I have a magical eye talisman I actually put on the wall that separated us because she was such an energy drain. I put that there. I had a little crystal grid. I had a whole magical setup. So this bitch could not be sucking me dry because she did. She was just an energy vampire. But she was more like Evie than Colin. This chick just wants to talk about all the bad things in her life and would just suck you dry. And I'm just like, I don't care. We all have problems.
And
suck it up, buttercup, and do something about it.
We have all messies at conventions, and they'll stand in front of your table, and they will block everybody else, and they will stand there for an hour talking to you.
Yes.
I had a guy stand in front of my table tell me about his it was a prostate. He had a surgery on his prostate. Tell me all about his prostate surgery. And I'm just like, do I fucking know you, dude? And you can't do that because you have to smile and look really polite and stuff because you're trying to. And he just stood there and never bought a thing. Just tell me about his dick surgery.
Every time. Yeah.
God.
Nobody can get into your stuff. We had a woman at the Southern Festival of Books this year. She had two big, huge dogs. She came into our booth and just sat them down. These two big, huge-ass dogs. And she just sat them down and talked to one of the other vendors and just talked. I'm just like, can you get these fucking dogs out of here? Because no one could get into our booth. One, because they're big fucking dogs. Two, they're dogs. Maybe somebody's afraid of a dog. And get these fucking dogs out of my booth.
Right.
But some people just are completely, they don't care. They just, they're
So I know. Some people are very inconsiderate.
And they don't understand. Because when I go to a booth, I'm always kind of standing sideways, so I don't cock block them. I don't want to cock block anybody.
Yep. I see people coming. I'll stand off to the side. Or, you know, like go a little bit behind there if I'm talking to you. You know,
and
I'll
stop
stand
talking.
There.
Let the people, the vendor, let the vendor do their shtick because you have your spiel. You'll have your, by the end of the day, you've done that spiel 1,000 times. You hate every book on your table. You're like, I hate every one of these books now. I hate them all.
I'm tired of talking about them.
You've done the spiel. Dave Barry talked about that back in the day when writers went on book tours. Remember those grand old days? Before we ever got, but he talked about that, about going on book tours, and by the end of it, you just looked at your book like it was the ugliest baby you've ever seen. You never want to talk about it ever again. You hate it. You hate your life. Mm-hmm. So we don't have that. We have cons.
That's right.
So true.
That's right. We have cons and conferences, and we're good.
Or you forget. For instance, some of my Jake stories, people try asking me questions about them. I don't remember because I've written a lot of stuff past Jake. I'm like, I'll have to go look that up again. I don't remember. Hold on a second. They don't understand that you've moved on. You're writing something else now.
Right.
My brain's into this now. So I don't
I
have to go back and reread that story and tell you stuff because I don't remember. I've written something else since then, so sorry.
Slept a lot since then, written a lot since then. Yeah,
I've slept since then, so yeah.
Yeah.
That's so true.
So, where is your next appearances? And before we get off of here, we're going a little over, people, so few minutes.
Yep.
Letting the listeners know. It will be available for playback. They can listen, but where can readers reach you?
Readers reach me? Well, I have a website. It's nnhbooks.com. You can go there. All of my stuff is on Amazon. You can go to Amazon, look me up, Nikki Nelson Hicks. You can follow me, find all of my stuff there. Let's see. I'm on all the social medias, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, all that, under either Nikki Nelson Hicks. Just look into that. Also, my next place I want to be is at AuthorCon in March. It's in Virginia. So I'm looking forward to that. It's put on by the Horror Writers Association. So it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be so many cool people. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
That is awesome.
That will be.
That is awesome.
I'm looking forward to it.
So, and which recommendations of titles of yours would you recommend to a new reader of yours? And feel free to promote anything.
It all depends on what you like. I mean, right now I really like The Galvanized Girl and Revenge of the Blood Red Maid. If you really are into some steampunk, and all of my stuff is cheap, quick, and weird. Okay, it's real. I write to divert. All my stuff's easy read. If you're looking for a good weird western with some cannibalistic trolls, hey, Gruff Springs is your thing. If you're looking for just a good old monster, monsters in the desert, because Rumble basically is, you got corporate espionage, you got some environmental terrorists, you got some weird shaman dude, you got monsters out the yin yang. It's great fun. And, Rumble, it depends on what you're really in the mood for. Or Sherlock Holmes, you're just looking for some really cool Sherlock Holmes and the Shrieking Pit. I can pretty much, whatever you're in the mood for. Oh, and you're looking for some pulp, some good old-fashioned noir 1930s New Orleans pulp with some monsters. I got my Jake Ishtonhedge stuff. We got zombie chickens, we got golems, we got boo daddies, we got a pirate ship, we got alchemists, all kinds of stuff. You name it, we got it. Ghosts, of course, ghosts. No vampires, though. You know, I have not written a vampire story yet. I cannot believe this. I've got to remedy this.
Really?
It hit me recently. I have never written a vampire story yet.
Write a vampire erotica or a vampire western erotica. Because you're really good at blending the genres.
Have something different. The film, the vampire genre, is like, oh, what do you do? It hasn't been done 1,000 times before.
Oh, God. I've never heard of a Western, really. Western, erotica, vampire. That would...
a brothel. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tombstone.
The wheels are turning now. They're turning here.
There you go. In
Stick it on the pile, man. Stick it on the pile.
There you go. Gave you an idea. There you go.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Well, thank you.
I'm going to read it. Let's know when it's done.
Yes. Yes.
I'll let you know. Okay.
I got to look into this. Is Gruff Springs the one with the Confederate gold? Is that also?
Yes. The problem at Gruff Springs. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really good. I mean, it's a fun story.
I'm getting tractor beamed into that one. That's going to be probably my next read of yours.
Usually, when men come to my booth, and I usually introduce them to Gruff Springs or Rumble. That's my two more masculine. Really, the guys are going to dig these stories. Yeah.
Nice. I like it. Well, thank you, Nikki.
Cool.
And we definitely need to have you back. Sooner than 150 episode, 190 episode gap next time. Because it is such a, you're always a blast. And
thank you.
And I know, and we'd love to have you. And I do hope you join us next summer. And thank you for very much for being on the show.
I will shoot you the info tomorrow.
It is.
Please send me the info. Well, thank you. I've had a great time too. Thank you.
Joy.
Thanks for inviting me. It's been great fun.
Yeah, and tell Alan I said hi. I haven't talked to him forever, Al Lewis.
Oh, Alan's still kicking.
Yeah.
He's got some
great
you should have him come to your show because he's got some really good stuff out.
Send him our way. Yeah. Tell him we'd love to have him on.
I will tell him.
But it's our 10th anniversary next summer. Tell him it's year 10.
Yeah, imagine.
So
oh, my God. Has it been that long? Oh,
yeah.
I'm so old. Yeah. Okay. I will let him know.
If there's anything else that we didn't cover that you were dying to, feel free to share with us, and then Holly can take us out. But, yeah, thank you for joining us. And, folks, next week and Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern, you can look forward to another Star Chamber Show live podcast. So I'm going to turn it over to Nikki to say goodnight, and then Holly can take us out.
Okay, well, good night, and thanks, everyone, for listening. I hope you enjoyed yourself.
Thank you, Nikki, and
okay,
we will definitely have to have you back sooner than later and give us some updates. And,
I will.
Send Alan our way. We'll get him on the show and let him know about Magic Jam and all that good stuff. So, that'd be great.
Okay.
Yeah, everybody, join us next Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for another great creative, another great chat. And I hope you all have a wonderful Nano Week. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Until next time, have fun. Good night, all.
Bye.